tide is right. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. I'm Father Tom Coyes. This is your Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. And happy and privileged to be sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. And hey, you know, there's good news here at the Winds of Change. Through the hard work of a number of people behind the scenes, we can now call our station the New Catholic Voice for Chicago. Right? Maybe you know, many of us know EWTN, and we're now going to broadcast a number of shows from EWTN radio. So that's great. That would be WSFI Catholic Radio, and we'll be transmitting on AM 750, which is WNDZ, which you're used to, but also 88.5 FM WSFI. So you're just going to have to listen in more, not only to the noon hour, but other shows as well. This is truly is nice news for those of us who work with Winds of Change and are interested in good Catholic content, as it were. Anyways, I'm going to start. Today's the Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows, September 15th, and it's an interesting feast because it's kind of it's not popular to promote the idea that our Blessed Mother sheds tears or that the Blessed Mother is sorrowing or sorrowful. We're only supposed to be positive, and we're only supposed to be joyful, and we're not supposed to emphasize the pain and the cross. We're not supposed to shed tears. But this feast day is all about that. And it's kind of consoling. And I'm going to say this at the outset. Now, there's so many things to talk about, and I want to get to some things on the COVID issue, right? And I also want to share with you some questions that I've been asked to respond to regarding the old Mass, the traditional Mass. But as we think of the Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows, I'm going to say it this way. I'm dropping the idea that a faithful person can shed tears or have a sorrowful side to your spirituality. If we drop that, we will increase psychological problems. Our psychological balance will be thrown off, because as much as we want to go through life you just joyful, my brain, happy, man. Happy-go-lucky, positive thinking, all these sort of hallmarks hallmarks of a good Catholic. if we don't appreciate the fact that the Blessed Mother can still be shedding tears for the state that the world is in, the state of her children in, our state, the state of our souls, then we lose. We become we become depressed because we're not allowed to be depressed. If you're only supposed to go around joyful and happy and whistling a happy tune, no matter what goes on in your life, then if you're told that any kind of sadness, any kind of tears are a sign that you're not fully full of the Holy Spirit, right? Blessed Mother is full of grace, another way of saying full of the Holy Spirit. And yet she, who is full of grace, can be sorrowful, would be contradictory. It would be a contradiction if we completely embrace what is the popular view of holiness, which is always joyful, always whistling a happy tune. I'm sure that many of the modern day, shall we say, Catholic pundits, I don't know if I've ever used that phrase before, but I'll use it today. Many of the Catholic pundits would say the mark of holiness is being joyful. And I like being joyful just as much as the next guy. But this feast day today of Our Lady of Sorrows shows that someone can be full of grace, someone can be very holy. Would we not agree that Mary is a holy person? I think so. That disdain for this feast day flows from a new sense of overcoming what was before, the old church. And to be honest, you can be too morose. You can be too sad when we think of the death of Christ, when we think of our sins as contributing to the death of Christ. What else would come naturally except sorrow and at least a morose kind of attitude, not the joyful singing all the time or smiling all the time spirit. The fact that we say joy is the mark of a holy person is in reaction to some extent that tears used to be the sign of a holy person or sadness being the mark of a holy person. Like so many things, and in the Chestertonian way, it's a paradox, and there has to be a balance, right? There are very good reasons for rejoicing and being happy, but there are also good reasons for shedding tears. And the mea culpa, or not only just my fault, but our fault, and that is the R of the whole human race. I think that's part of the secret of the balance between joy and sorrow, is that a great deal of our sorrow comes from so many people that continually reject Christ and his ways, you know? I thought this was, there's another interesting little clip. Maybe you're familiar with Bill Bennett, one of the great commentators. He has a radio show. He was on Chicago market here for a while, but WIND got rid of him for one reason or another. Or maybe he just went into podcasting. He worked in the Reagan administration. He's a Catholic guy. He was one of those Catholics that was a staunch Democrat for most of his life. But when Ronald Reagan came along, he became a Reagan Democrat. And then he became a regular Republican, saying that he didn't leave the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party left him. Anyways, you probably know the name Bill Bennett. He has a wonderful little, it's not really a podcast, it's a It's a he calls it the Patriots, the American Patriots Almanac, you know. So today, September 15th, this is worth noting. It harbingers back to a sense that we in the United States sense something bad about the atheistic communist agenda for the world. Today, today, September 15th, is also the anniversary of an important military action back in the Korean War. In June, the North Koreans, which were the strong communists, of course, they poured over the 38th parallel and swept across South Korea. They weren't supposed to do that. President Harry Truman realized that the United States had to stop this naked aggression no matter what.
Wow.
Truman said. If you just left unchecked, he argued, in Europe, in Latin America. Truman turned to General Douglas MacArthur, who just 5 years earlier stood on the deck of the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay to receive the Japanese surrender that ended World War II. Might remember that. So General MacArthur, at the age of 70, came up with a plan that was audacity itself. He proposed a seaborne invasion behind the red lines at Incheon, a port on the northwest coast of South Korea, just 25 miles from Seoul, the capital of South Korea. He said, "We drew up every conceivable natural and geographical handicap, and Incheon had them all." Well, this was one of MacArthur's aides. Those hazards included deadly 30-foot tides, dangerous currents, and a harbor surrounded by seawalls. MacArthur's naval chief could muster no better endorsement of the plan than it was not impossible. MacArthur kept his own counsel, puffing constantly on his trademark corn cob pipe. The general gathered 261 ships, and on September 15th, 1950, the Marines stormed ashore at Incheon. For breathtaking boldness, the assault ranked alongside Washington's crossing of the Delaware and Grant's descent on Shiloh. The invasion caught the North Koreans off guard. They had considered Incheon invulnerable for attack. Well, American troops pushed inland and within 11 days entered Seoul. South Korea's aged president, Ri, accepted the return of his liberated capital with tearful gratitude. He said, "We love you, America." He told MacArthur, as the savior of our race, the war, the war would last 3 more years, but the daring landing at Incheon ultimately saved millions of Koreans from a totalitarian regime.
Wow.
You did show
my brain, man.
A sense of there are nation states, there are philosophies, there are religious attachments to the trends in history that the United States would fight against and would stand up for and defend those who wanted that kind of spirit of freedom and Christian principles that South Korea had. How sad it might be that I have to point out that just in recent days the creating of Afghanistan as a nation of the Taliban, and then it will produce very, very sad results if you're able to check out the news in those areas. We really have to pray for some kind of response, some kind of holding back those poor Christian people those poor, poor Muslim people who helped the United States in their efforts to put down the Taliban and all the other terrorist-bent organizations. What are you going to say? There's the sadness and the short-sightedness on behalf of the military and political voices that carried out that plan, as it were, or didn't carry out a plan. Anyways, well, I think we're ready for our first break, right, Nick? So we'll get ready for our first break here, and I'll come back with some things on the TLM and the COVID and all the rest. But anyways, I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, which is WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and 88.5 FM WSFI.
All right, pets, pipe down. I've got something to say to you. Yes, that means you too. Please tell your owners that Father Anthony would like to bless all of you on Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. on the grounds of St. Stanislaus Kostka. And if it rains, under the school portico or the St. Francis of Assisi Blessing of the Animals. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. The Blessing of the Animals, Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. And the goldfish are welcome too.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coy's here again. Isn't that great news about our little radio extravaganza here, hooking up with EWTN? It is beautiful, and we thank all those behind the scenes that are working on it. And please consider a donation, as we are listener-supported, as it were. And we need to keep good Catholic content in the greater Chicagoland area and everywhere podcasts are available, and that's anywhere where there's internet connection, or if you download, and you don't even need an internet connection if you download your podcast. I usually don't download a podcast, but listen while I'm on the internet, right? Because when you download something from the internet and it goes onto your phone and or computer, it takes up space, and it's better just to do it while you're connected to the internet. Anyways, so can I share with you my beginning thoughts on a survey that the diocese is put together regarding the traditional Latin Mass? It's in response to the letter that Pope Francis put out called Traditionis Custodes. And there are certain limitations, but it's not a ban. I don't think it's a ban. It's just trying to avoid certain abuses, I guess. And so there's like 8 questions. I just want to share the first question with you, and we'll get to the other questions soon enough. So the survey from the Arch is asking me, as a priest who is learning and does the TLM, some of my thoughts. So I appreciate the opportunity to share some of my thoughts, and in that sense, I'm very grateful for the opportunity. So I start out, the first question is, what are the benefits of these celebrations as well as the challenges they present? So I begin my response to that question by splitting my experience between me as a priest and or the experience of people in the pews, right? It's two different perspectives, obviously. So from my perspective as a priest, I want to say, first, doing the TLM affects the way I pray during the TLM Mass, during the by praying the TLM Mass, it affects the way I do the Novus Ordo Mass. Are you following me? And so, wait a minute. Okay. There we go. I'm sorry. Anyways, the principal thing that I see as a celebrant on TLM is I'm very aware of of the element that I'm not on stage. That's my first thing I want to share with anybody who cares about what a priest might think. By facing the tabernacle for most of the prayers, except for the Liturgy of the Word, of course, and that's a major part of any Mass, both forms of the Mass. But you can't help, as a priest, feel that you're not on stage. And that always has been a little bit of a... It can be a good thing, because if you know you're on stage, if you know you're being watched, if you know you want to perform well, you're going to try to do a good Mass, right? But that being said, it works into your heart and soul that if you're going to be on stage and you're going to do a good Mass, it does make you want to perform, or it makes you include things that will please the crowd, I guess, you know, as was it Bing Crosby or whoever said, always leave them laughing when you're on stage, or always leave them singing. And of course, those are fairly good principles if you're an actor on a stage doing a show. But the always leave them laughing or always leave them singing at Mass is not so good, right? So the traditional Latin Mass takes the priest, has him face the tabernacle, and that sense of being on stage is eliminated, and I say for that 2 thumbs up. So as a priest for over 35 years, I have loved saying the Mass of Second Vatican Council, the Novus Ordo. But there has always been a certain feeling of that performance, and I've always wanted to do a good Mass for the people, and so this includes with it a certain element of performance. So a second thing about the TLM is both a blessing and a curse. I'm going to say it this way. That is the need for the priest to be attentive to many details, right? As a priest doing the TLM, there's a lot more rubrics. There's a lot more things to remember. Obviously, the Novus Ordo did simplify things, and in the simplifying of things, you didn't have to remember as many things. So I remember back in the day in the seminary, I had a certain Father Wilton Gregory as our liturgy teacher. Now, unfortunately, I have to say he's got a few bad marks in the sense that he completely defended Cardinal McCarrick, of course, and all that, being the bishop that followed him there in Washington, D.C. But putting that aside, I remember Father Wilton Gregory instructing us to pay attention to the details of the Mass. There are, so that was good. I remember saying, be reverent, of course. Open your hands for the orans position in such a way, though it's not an exact thing. But anyways, the attention to details is a blessing because it makes you see the rich meaning in the motions and in the details, right? Everything is symbolic in the Mass, right? One of the interesting things that happened in my priesthood is when I was saying Mass for shut-ins on WGN when they had it early in the morning, if you remember that, you had to get the Mass in 26 minutes or something like that. And so there was a nun, there was a sister who was there in the studio trying to just organize things and keep things rolling. And so she said, as a way to make sure the Mass is only 26 minutes, you have to eliminate the lavabo rite, that where you wash your fingers and you say, Lord, wash away my iniquities and cleanse me from my sins. And I thought, well, that's not a good idea to admit that. So, because that's rich with meaning, right? You know, and you're aware of your unworthiness or your sinfulness. You're not a saint yet. It's not good to just go around thinking you're a saint. We're a saint in progress, right? Or we could believe we're in the process of trying to become a saint, but we're not a saint yet. So anyways, that's what I mean by the rich meaning of the rubrics. And that's what the TLM does. It does focus you on. Like, for instance, one of the things that you do have in the Tridentine Mass is a lot of the genuflections. There's more genuflections. And, of course, if you're older and you have bad knees, that becomes quite a pain, but thank the Lord I'm not there yet. And just all those genuflections can't help but make you think something holy is going on here. I'm bowing before something sacred, you know. So that's a beautiful thing. But anyway, attention to details can also be a curse as a celebrant, I'm saying. I'm aware that some people in the pews like to watch carefully so that I worry more about getting it right. I don't want to be yelled at after Mass. And some of the people that do love the Tridentine Mass know all the rubrics pretty well, and they're all too willing to tell you what you did wrong. So that I must confess, is one of the reasons why the attention to the rubrics can be a bit of a curse for me. Usually, when they correct me, there's always some interesting tradition or some interesting theology that goes along with the rubrics. One of the ones, for instance, is I just learned because somebody told me I was doing it wrong, is that the priest takes off the maniple, which is a little, like, it looks like a little stole that you don't wear around your neck, but you wear it on your hand. You're supposed to take it off during your sermon. And I thought, oh, interesting. I was glad to learn that meaning because obviously your sermon is your thoughts and your words. It's not, doesn't raise to the level of the Bible itself when you read the gospel or other parts of the scriptures. So anyways, that's one little example. Like a little detail that you're supposed to do in the TLM is put the purificator on the altar in a certain position. And I've been saying Mass for 35 years, and I never really thought of exactly the position that I put the purificator on the altar for. And so the fact that I did it wrong by putting it in a horizontal position as opposed to a vertical position, and which way the cross goes, there's a little cross on the purificator. I found that a little annoying, I must say, that we would worry so much about that kind of detail. I haven't discovered the theological meaning behind that. So anyways, now thirdly, the fact that the prayers are in Latin, and my Latin is just elementary, saying all these prayers forces me to verify my Latin with the English translation. This double reading or praying will push me to contemplate more the meaning of the prayers. So this is actually a good thing. It's like when you read something in English and you like what you read, so you read it again to let it soak in some more. So having the prayers in Latin diminishes the constant problem of our multi-ethnic congregations. So in our case, Spanish-speaking or Polish-speaking people are united in a good way because they set aside their modern language for the ancient language of Latin. So anyways, those are a few little thoughts about the TLM, Traditional Latin Mass, and I'll share a little bit more as I fill out that survey with you. Anyways, let's take another break, right, Nick? We're ready to take another break. And so I'll come back. We got to discuss some more COVID stuff, as it were. I want to share with you the letter that Bishop Papraki wrote regarding the vaccine mandate. I think it's one of the best things I've read recently, and I think you'll appreciate his insights. So we'll do that when we come back. But anyways, I am Father Tom Coyce, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You are listening to The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio, Voice for Chicago, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and 88.5 FM WSFI.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church. Is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
We are the students of St. Stan's Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here with you, trying to wrinkle your brain. And of course, the topic of the day has a lot to do with COVID.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
And it comes from Bishop Papraki. Some of you may know Bishop Papraki. He put together a very thoughtful letter for his diocese, and it really is worth checking out his insights here. So I'll just read it to you. He says, debates about mask mandates and required vaccinations are much in the news in light of Governor Pritzker's executive order. He says in his diocese, the schools are already complying with the governor's prior executive order regarding masks, and our parishes are asked to follow the new mask mandate in indoor public places. Our parishes will also continue our other safety measures as COVID cases, hospitalization rates, ICU admissions have risen rapidly in recent weeks. Again, or let me interrupt his letter by saying, yeah, I am hearing there are a lot of people that are getting this dang thing. Thank goodness many are recovering. And unfortunately, some of the ones who are dying are not really dying of COVID, but dying with COVID. In other words, it increases the difficulty of the body fighting other things, which of course is sad, but it's a different situation than we're getting. Boy, if I have time to, I gotta read to you some of the people that are dying are already vaccinated. You know, that's the big recent debate going on. But anyways, back to Bishop's letter. The executive order's face covering requirements for indoor public places applies to all individuals in Illinois who are two or over. Who can medically tolerate a face covering, right? There's some people that just can't tolerate a face covering, and that medical condition should be respected, right? Noting that some people may be excused from wearing a face covering, no one is to be excluded from attending Mass for not wearing a face covering. The obligation to attend Holy Mass on Sundays and Holy Days of Obligation is paramount, since eternal life is the most important consideration. As Pope Pius XII said in his 1957 address to Catholic physicians, life, health, all temporal activities are in fact subordinate to eternal spiritual ends, right? We have to obey God. And one of the great commands of God is to worship Him on Holy Days on Sunday. So Bishop Papraki also mentioned, since the sanctuary of the church is not a public place and that people are not free to talk through the sanctuary area where the altar, ambo, and tabernacle are located, priests, deacons, and lectors are not expected to wear face coverings while fulfilling their functions at Mass, since this would interfere with their public speaking and the performance of their liturgical roles. With regard to mandatory vaccinations, while the church promotes vaccination as morally acceptable and urges cooperation with public health authorities in promoting the common good, there are matters of public health and moral conscience involved in vaccines that must be respected. It's a very important point, right? Therefore, vaccine participation must be voluntary and cannot be forced. As the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, under the authority of Pope Francis, indicated just last December, while we encourage vaccination, we cannot and will not force vaccination as a condition for employment or the freedom of the faithful to worship in our parishes. Further, it is imperative that the faithful who choose not to be vaccinated recognize their moral duty to take other measures to protect others from harm. Whether or not one is concerned about personal risks associated with COVID, each person has a moral duty to act responsibly out of concern for his or her neighbor by diligently following other safety measures. In this regard, the executive orders vaccination requirements for healthcare workers, school personnel, higher education personnel, state-owned or operated facilities, provides the following exemption. Individuals will be exempt from the requirement to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 if one, vaccination is medically contraindicated, including any individual who is entitled to accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act or any other law applicable to a disability-related reasonable accommodation. Or two, vaccination would require the individual to violate or forego a sincerely held religious belief, practice, or observance. Individuals who demonstrate they meet the requirements for an exemption will be subject to additional testing requirements. Might want to add here, too, you might want to consider what Dr. McCullough, I think it's Dr. James or Robert McCullough. Anyways, he's an immunologist from Texas, and he's adamant about saying that if you don't have symptoms, going for tests are really if you don't have symptoms, going for a test can be counterproductive because of the high rate of false positives, and you do not transmit the virus if you are asymptomatic. He's giving a much different approach than what we usually hear. So it's certainly worth it. You really need to listen to many of the doctors, from what the frontline doctors. Please check out LifeSite News. They often have great articles on these things. So anyways, in seeking to demonstrate that they have a sincerely held religious belief, practice, or observance, some people have been asking priests to write a letter on their behalf, and some employers are requiring such letters from clergy. I, Bishop Brocky, would argue that such letters are unnecessary and inappropriate. In an article that I co-authored last April in The Observer, with Professor Gerald Bradley, who teaches constitutional law at Notre Dame Law School in South Bend, Indiana, we wrote that giving precipitous witness to the truth about the horrors of abortion does not depend upon holding the Catholic faith or adhering to any other religion. It is based upon moral and scientific considerations equally available to all persons. For that reason, there is no non-arbitrary ground to distinguish religious from simply moral objections to the vaccine. In that sense, no one should need a letter from a priest. As we also wrote, a religious, moral, or other exemption of conscience should be asserted not by documents, but by a simple conversation seeking only to establish that the individual has a sincerely held, reasonable belief that they should not receive the vaccine. That's a very good point. Moral objections of conscience should be respected, but should not require a letter from a priest or other clergyman, since the objection is based on the person's individual conscience, not some specific tenet of the Catholic faith. It is not even apparent that any such letter from a priest could helpfully say beyond restating what I have here recounted, which is that the Catholic Church teaches that some persons may have conscientious objections to taking the COVID vaccines, and that these conscientious convictions ought to be respected. And please note that the National Catholic Bioethics Center has provided a vaccine exemption template letter for Catholics who themselves seek an exemption from an immunization requirement. So, and he concludes this way. In the event, however, that an employer requires a letter from the clergy, the essential point from which the attestation of a Catholic priest might be helpful is therefore the primacy of conscience. As Pope Paul VI wrote in his 1965 Declaration on Religious Freedom, Dignitatis Humanae, quote, the Christian faithful, in common with all other men, possess the civil right not to be hindered in leading their lives in accordance with their conscience. Wait, I think I said that wrong. Everyone possesses the civil right not to be hindered in leading their lives according to their consciences. More recently, Pope Francis has said, the conscience is the interior place for listening to the truth, to goodness, for listening to God. It is the inner place of my relationship with Him, the one who speaks to my heart and helps me to discern, to understand the way I must take, and once the decision is made, to go forward and stay faithful. Thus, while Catholics are not bound to refuse the vaccine as a form of immoral cooperation with abortion, and while there is a prima facie obligation to cooperate with public health authorities in promoting the common good, each Catholic must make his or her own decision.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The Catholic Church recognizes that some Catholics will be bound in conscience to refuse the vaccine. May God give us this grace. Let's be thankful for Bishop Papraki for spelling out a basic tenet of our faith that we can have moral or conscientious religious objections to certain mandates from government imposed policies or laws. Without that, we lose that tremendous sovereignty of a faithful people. We in effect say that the government is in charge of the church, and that has always been something we have to stand up against. Anyways, okay, well, let's take another break, right, Nick? We're here, and I'll come back with a couple other things that really do hit home pretty hard. So anyways, I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio, Voice for Chicago, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and 88.5 FM WSFI.
All right, pets, pipe down. I've got something to say to you. Yes, that means you too. Please tell your owners that Father Anthony would like to bless all of you on Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. on the grounds of St. Stanislaus Kostka. And if it rains, under the school portico for the St. Francis of Assisi Blessing of the Animals. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. The Blessing of the Animals, Saturday, October 2nd at 11 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. And the goldfish are welcome too.
We are the students of St. Stan LaCosta Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Sorry about that. Couldn't find the right button on that. So a lot of brain wrinkling issues going on, of course, here. I'd like to finish up with this. I hope if you check out LifeSite News, you might have seen this one. This is a real life story about a TV station in Detroit that was looking for stories of unvaccinated people that got sick and died. So they put out a notice for such stories, and they were going to run an episode on this. So it was Detroit's ABC station, and they asked Facebook users to share stories of unvaccinated people who had passed away from COVID-19. But they were flooded with stories of death and injury as a result of the so-called vaccines. So here we got, after the vaccines were available to everyone, did you lose an unvaccinated, this is what Facebook wanted, did you lose an unvaccinated loved one to COVID? If you're willing to share your family story, please contact us for more information, and we're going to work on a story on this. So an overwhelming number of people responded with stories, not of death of the unvaccinated, but of death and injury soon after the COVID-19 shot. I don't know. One person says Maximilian Robespierre. Ooh, how about that name from the French Revolution, right? Not a good person from Catholic historical purposes, but he says, I don't know anyone who died from COVID, but I do know a 37-year-old who got the vaccine and died of a brain aneurysm 8 days later. Richard Smother shared, my coworker's daughter, 12 years old, had to be rushed to the ER after she collapsed an hour after her second shot. Krista Evans shared, I know three people personally that died shortly after being fully vaxxed. All the people I know that have had the China virus had very mild flu-like symptoms. So why in the world would anyone get that poison, she calls it? Becky Birch wrote in and said, an aunt died a week after the shot. The family never thought much about it until visiting with another cousin who had family die after the shot with the same strange issue. Not sure the details. Now they think it was the shot. So besides deaths, the testimonies of side effects from the so-called vaccine cover a wide range of injuries and symptoms, from heart attacks and blood clots to digestive issues to loss of sight and movement. My mother had a heart attack 4 days after receiving her first vaccine. She now has a blood clot in her lung. That was Jessica Molden. Julie Smith wrote, my neighbor died from the vax. The funeral is next week. My mom can't feel her arms and legs. My relative has been in ER several times with debilitating headaches. My mom and the BFF doctors don't correlate the two, but the timing makes it suspect. My husband's doctor refused to let him test for COVID antibodies. So she senses that these doctors are complicit. The stories go on and on, prompting many social media users to openly marvel at how the Facebook testimonies almost entirely contradict the intended direction of the thread and the mainstream media narrative. So the comments section isn't going the way you planned, wrote Nicole Bocher. Well, this backfired on you in the media, said Scott McCarthy. The post has since had at least 125,000 comments and 125,000 shares. The heavy ratio of comments about death and injury from the jab tells a starkly different story about the safety and usefulness of the shot than that shared by the mainstream news outlets like this TV station in Detroit. The same day it asked for stories of death of the unvaccinated due to COVID-19, it shared the CDC statistic claiming that unvaccinated people are 11 times more likely to die from COVID than those fully vaccinated. The U.S. Center for Disease and Control and Prevention Director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, even claimed in late July that more than 97% of hospitalizations from COVID right now are of unvaccinated people. This contradicted the CDC's own data released at the time, which stated that 15% of in-hospital COVID deaths occur in the vaccinated. Moreover, Walensky later admitted during a White House press briefing that the number didn't reflect the data from the Delta variant. As of early August, Israel was reporting waning effectiveness of the jabs and that 85 to 90% of the hospitalizations are in fully vaccinated people. Isn't that incredible? It just makes your head spin, doesn't it? It's sad and it's frustrating. At the most, you know, this really tests us all because we want to trust our authorities. We want to cooperate, so many of us. But these other voices from scientists and doctors who don't have any reason to lie just have to be appreciated, just have to be incorporated. And that's bottom line, at least in my humble estimation, why there has to be respect for one's conscience in dealing with these things. Again, I think I've said this before and I'll say it again. All people want to see the pandemic end. All people nobody wants to see more people die. Though it's a silly, irrational thought to think that nobody will die of anything. We know that the mortality rate is 100%, right? We all will die. One little figure that I think we should keep in the forefront of our minds is the fact that flu deaths went down practically to zero last year, which is just impossible. The fact that 400,000, 500,000 people every year die of flu, and that's often what people catch when they're in the hospital fighting something else, but a flu can develop into pneumonia, of course, and it can take the lives of many, many people even as they're fighting something else. But the fact that flu deaths went down to zero and COVID deaths soared to 600,000, it's got to make you suspicious about those numbers. And we pray. So let's keep praying as always. And I just want you to remember, you are listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on the new Catholic Radio Voice of Chicago, WSFI, on AM 750, WNDC, and 88.5 FM, WSFI. God bless you all. I'm Father Tom Coys.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
words that you say when right from wrong has become so obscure. It does not take that long, can you see?